Brinkerhoff groaned, regretting that he had called her back to check the crypto report. He eyed her outstretched hand. You're talking about classified information inside the director's private quarters. Do you have any idea what would happen if we got caught? The director is in South America. I'm sorry. I just can't. Brinkerhoff crossed his arms and walked out. Midge stared after him, her gray eyes smoldering. Oh, yes, you can, she whispered. Then she turned back to Big Brother and called up the video archives. Midge'll get over it, Brinkerhoff told himself as he settled in at his desk and started going over the rest of his reports. He couldn't be expected to hand out the director's keys whenever Midge got paranoid. He had just begun checking the ComSec breakdowns when his thoughts were interrupted by the sound of voices coming from the other room. He set down his work and walked to his doorway. The main suite was dark, all except a dim shaft of grayish light from Midge's half-open door. He listened. The voices continued. They sounded excited. Midge? No response. He strode through the darkness to her workspace. The voices were vaguely familiar. He pushed the door open. The room was empty. Midge's chair was empty. The sound was coming from overhead. Brinkerhoff looked up at the video monitors and instantly felt ill. The same image was playing on each one of the 12 screens, a kind of perversely choreographed ballet. Brinkerhoff steadied himself on the back of Midge's chair and watched in horror. Chad? The voice was behind him. He spun and squinted into the darkness. Midge was standing kitty-corner across the main suite's reception area in front of the director's double doors. Her palm was outstretched. The key, Chad. Brinkerhoff flushed. He turned back to the monitors. He tried to block out the images overhead, but it was no use. He was everywhere, groaning with pleasure and eagerly fondling Carmen Huerta's small, honey-covered breasts. Chapter 66. Becker crossed the concourse toward the restroom doors only to find the door marked Caballeros blocked by an orange pylon and a cleaning cart filled with detergents and mops. He eyed the other door, Damas. He strode over and rapped loudly. Hola, he called, pushing the ladies' room door open an inch. Con permiso? Silence. He went in. The restroom was typical Spanish institutional. Perfectly square, white tile, one incandescent bulb overhead. As usual, there was one stall and one urinal. Whether the urinals were ever used in the women's bathrooms was immaterial. Adding them saved the contractors the expense of having to build the extra stall. Becker peered into the restroom in disgust. It was filthy. The sink was clogged with murky brown water. Dirty paper towels were strewn everywhere. The floor was soaked. The old electric hand blower on the wall was smeared with greenish fingerprints. Becker stepped in front of the mirror and sighed. The eyes that usually stared back with fierce clarity were not so clear tonight. How long have I been running around over here? He wondered. The math escaped him. Out of professorial habit, he shimmied his necktie's Windsor knot up on his collar. Then he turned to the urinal behind him. As he stood there, he found himself wondering if Susan was home yet. Where could she have gone? To Stone Manor without me? Hey, a female voice behind him said angrily. Becker jumped. I'm... He stammered, hurrying to zip up. I'm sorry, I... Becker turned to face the girl who had just entered. She was a young sophisticate, right off the pages of 17 magazine. She wore conservative plaid pants and a white sleeveless blouse. In her hand was a red L.L. Bean duffel. Her blonde hair was perfectly blow-dried. I'm sorry, Becker fumbled, buckling his belt. The men's room was... Anyway, I'm leaving. Fucking weirdo. Becker did a double take. The profanity seemed inappropriate coming from her lips, like sewage flowing from a polished decanter. But as Becker studied her, he saw that she was not as polished as he'd first thought. Her eyes were puffy and bloodshot, and her left forearm was swollen. Underneath the reddish irritation on her arm, the flesh was blue. Jesus, Becker thought, Intravenous drugs. Who would have guessed? Get out, she yelled. Just get out. Becker momentarily forgot all about the ring, the NSA, all of it. His heart went out to the young girl. Her parents had probably sent her over here with some prep school study program and a visa card, and she'd ended up all alone in a bathroom in the middle of the night doing drugs. Are you okay? He asked, backing toward the door. I'm fine. Her voice was haughty. You can leave now. Becker turned to go. He shot her forearm a last sad glance. There's nothing you can do, David. Leave it alone. Now! She hollered. Becker nodded. As he left, he gave her a sad smile. Be careful. Chapter 67. Susan, Hale panted, his face in hers. He was sitting, one leg on either side of her, his full weight on her midsection. His tailbone ground painfully into her pubis through the thin fabric of her skirt. His nose was dripping blood all over her. She tasted vomit in the back of her throat. His hands were at her chest. She felt nothing. Is he touching me? It took a moment for Susan to realize. Hale was buttoning her top button and covering her up. Susan, Hale gasped, breathless. You've got to get me out of here. Susan was in a daze. Nothing made sense. Susan, you've got to help me. Strathmore killed Chartrukian. I saw it. It took a moment for the words to register. Strathmore killed Chartrukian? Hale obviously had no idea Susan had seen him downstairs. Strathmore knows I saw him, Hale spat. He'll kill me too. Had Susan not been breathless with fear, she would have laughed in his face. She recognized the divide-and-conquer mentality of an ex-Marine. Invent lies. Pit your enemies against each other. It's true, he yelled. We've got to call for help. I think we're both in danger. She did not believe a word he said. Hale's muscular legs were cramping, and he rolled up on his haunches to shift his weight slightly. He opened his mouth to speak, but he never got the chance. As Hale's body rose, Susan felt the circulation surge back into her legs. Before she knew what had happened, a reflex instinct jerked her left leg back hard into Hale's crotch. She felt her kneecap crush the soft sack of tissue between his legs. Hale whimpered in agony and instantly went limp. He rolled onto his side, clutching himself. Susan twisted out from under his dead weight. She staggered toward the door, knowing she'd never be strong enough to get out. Making a split-second decision, Susan positioned herself behind the long maple meeting table and dug her feet into the carpet. Mercifully, the table had casters. She strode with all her might toward the arched glass wall, pushing the table before her. The casters were good, and the table rolled well. Halfway across Node 3, she was at a full sprint. 5 feet from the glass wall, Susan heaved and let go. She leapt to one side and covered her eyes. After a sickening crack, the wall exploded in a shower of glass. The sounds of crypto rushed into Node 3 for the first time since its construction. Susan looked up. Through the jagged hole, she could see the table. It was still rolling. It spun wide circles out across the crypto floor and eventually disappeared into the darkness. Susan rammed her mangled Ferragamos back on her feet, shot a last glance at the still writhing Greg Hale, and dashed across the sea of broken glass, out onto the crypto floor. Chapter 68. Now, wasn't that easy? Midge said with a sneer as Brinkerhoff handed over the key to Fontaine's office. Brinkerhoff looked beaten. I'll erase it before I go, Midge promised. Unless you and your wife want it for your private collection.
Just get the damn print out, he snapped, and then get out!
Si, senor, Midge cackled in a thick Puerto Rican accent. She winked and headed across the suite to Fontaine's double doors. Leland Fontaine's private office looked nothing like the rest of the directorial suite. There were no paintings, no overstuffed chairs, no ficus plants, no antique clocks. His space was streamlined for efficiency. His glass-topped desk and black leather chair sat directly in front of his enormous picture window. 3 file cabinets stood in the corner next to a small table with a French press coffee pot. The moon had risen high over Fort Meade,
and the soft light filtering through the window accentuated the starkness of the director's furnishings. "What the hell am I doing?" Brinkerhoff wondered. Midge strode to the printer and scooped up the cue list. She squinted in the darkness. "I can't read the data," she complained. "Turn on the lights." "You're reading it outside. Now come on." But Midge was apparently having too much fun. She toyed with Brinkerhoff, walking to the window and angling the readout for a better view. "Midge!" She kept reading. Brinkerhoff shifted anxiously in the doorway. "Midge, come on! These are the director's private quarters." "It's here somewhere," she muttered, studying the printout. "Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet, I know it." She moved closer to the window. Brinkerhoff began to sweat. Midge kept reading. After a few moments, she gasped. "I knew it! Strathmore did it! He really did! The idiot!" She held up the paper and shook it. "He bypassed Gauntlet. Have a look." Brinkerhoff stared, dumbfounded a moment, and then raced across the director's office. He crowded in next to Midge in front of the window. She pointed to the end of the readout. Brinkerhoff read in disbelief. "What the?" The printout contained a list of the last 36 files that had entered Translator. After each file was a 4-digit Gauntlet clearance code. However, the last file on the sheet had no clearance code. It simply read, "Manual bypass." "Jesus," Brinkerhoff thought. "Midge strikes again." "The idiot," Midge sputtered, seething. "Look at this. Gauntlet rejected the file twice, mutation strings, and he's still bypassed. What the hell was he thinking?" Brinkerhoff felt weak-kneed. He wondered why Midge was always right. Neither of them noticed the reflection that had appeared in the window beside them. A massive figure was standing in Fontaine's open doorway. "Jeez," Brinkerhoff choked. "You think we have a virus?" Midge sighed. "Nothing else it could be." "Could be none of your damn business," the deep voice boomed from behind them. Midge knocked her head against the window. Brinkerhoff tipped over the director's chair and wheeled toward the voice. He immediately knew the silhouette. "Director!" Brinkerhoff gasped. He strode over and extended his hand. "Welcome home, sir." The huge man ignored it. I thought," Brinkerhoff stammered, retracting his hand. "I thought you were in South America." Leland Fontaine glared down at his aide with eyes like bullets. "Yes. And now I'm back." Chapter 69. "Hey, mister." Becker had been walking across the concourse toward a bank of payphones. He stopped and turned. Coming up behind him was the girl he'd just surprised in the bathroom. She waved for him to wait. "Mister, wait!" "Now what?" Becker groaned. "She wants to press invasion of privacy charges?" The girl dragged her duffel toward him. When she arrived, she was now wearing a huge smile. "Sorry to yell at you back there. You just kind of startled me." "No problem," Becker assured, somewhat puzzled. "I was in the wrong place." "This will sound crazy," she said, batting her bloodshot eyes. "But you wouldn't happen to have some money you could lend me, would you?" Becker stared at her in disbelief. "Money for what?" he demanded. "I'm not funding your drug habit, if that's what you're asking." "I'm trying to get back home," the blonde said. "Can you help?" "Miss your flight?" She nodded. "Lost my ticket. They wouldn't let me get on. Airlines can be such assholes. I don't have the cash to buy another." "Where are your parents?" Becker asked. "States." "Can you reach them?" "Nope, already tried. I think they're weekending on somebody's yacht." Becker scanned the girl's expensive clothing. "You don't have a credit card?" "Yeah, but my dad canceled it. He thinks I'm on drugs." "Are you on drugs?" Becker asked, deadpan, eyeing her swollen forearm. The girl glared, indignant. "Of course not." She gave Becker an innocent huff, and he suddenly got the feeling he was being played